Welcome back, listeners, to Sandman Stories Presents, a folklore podcast where I read you to sleep or until the next story. I'm your host, Dustin. Today we are starting a book of Ecuadorian folktales collected by Mario Conde. He has given me permission to cover his tales and get them out to the wider world. The name of the book is 13 Ecuadorian Legends and a Ghost. The first story is about a girl born of the sea and who can see into the future. And the second story is about a lone orange tree who will not let its oranges be taken away. Okay, let's begin. Seafoam, or Espuma del Mar. In pre-Columbian times, there was no greater warrior village than Huancavilca, founded where the city of Guayaquil is today. In addition to their reputation for being great warriors, they were also renowned for a mysterious seer who lived among them. She was called Porsoja, or Seafoam. The seer arrived one day, just off the coast of the peninsula of Santa Elena, in a small wooden ship. She was only a child then, wrapped in fine blankets that were marked with hieroglyphs. She wore a pendant with a golden conch shell around her neck. There was something supernatural about this girl. Her hair was long and golden, like the threads of fresh corn silk. Her teeth were like tiny pearls. Her skin was the color of clouds. After the villagers of Huancavilca took her in, they presented her to the most powerful seers and spirit doctors so that they might examine her and reveal where she had come from. However, none of them could offer a real answer, just venturing that she must be the daughter of the sea, sent to the people as a guardian. This daughter of the sea grew into a woman. Like any wandering spirit, she roamed freely over the plains and hills, visited towns and homes, played with children and birds, but there were also times when she would not leave her cabin. When she was deep in meditation, she would take the seashell between her fingers and place it close to her ear. She could hear a voice calling to her from the depths of the ocean. In a trance, she foretold wars, predicted victories, and announced the droughts that would sometimes follow abundant harvests. Crowding around her, the villagers listened to the words that everyone knew would come to pass, just as day passes into night. The predictions of the Daughter of the Sea attracted two visitors to her village, Hayana Capac, the Lord of Courage and Strength, and then soon after, his son, Atahualpa. Porsoja predicted the death of Huanca Capac in Tomabamba and the fratricidal war between Atahualpa and Huascar. The predictions for the Prince of Quito was that he would have a victory over Huascar, but also the short time that his victory would last. She also predicted the arrival of white men in metal dresses that were going to take him prisoner in Cajamarca and then kill him. After the pronouncements, Porsoja announced that her time on the land had come to an end, and at once she ran into the sea. She waded out into the water until it wet her golden threads that looked like fresh corn. She took the golden shell from her neck and blew on it gently. Then slowly she returned to the seafoam from where she had come. The end. Okay, and story number two, The Enchanted Orange Tree. In ancient times, the women of Hipihapa in the province of Manabi washed their clothes in the springs of Chocotete, a long-extinct volcano which was part of the sulfuric spas of Guayas, famous for their healing powers. With the clothes on the backs of their mules, the women would hike up the hillside, flowing with abundant waters. The path was almost magical with the dark green springs and lone orange tree, which, as incredible as it may seem, bore beautiful, ripe, fragrant fruit all year round. Beyond this miraculous abundance, the laundresses spoke of the tree that warily guarded its fruit. It would allow people to take its oranges, sweeter than anyone had ever tried before, but only if they would eat them there where the tree could see. No one was allowed to take the oranges away from the hill. They called it the Enchanted Orange Tree. Why did the tree behave this way? No one knows. One day, a young man, who had ignored the women's tales, climbed up Chocotete with a mule to harvest a load of the delicious oranges. At about noon, the young man reached the tree, whose branches were heavy with the ripe fruit. He reached up and plucked an orange off the tree. Of course, it was the sweetest and most succulent he had ever tasted. Then he picked all the oranges he could fit into his sack, loaded it onto his mule, and began the descent. Walking behind the beast, the youth only had one thought. He must return the next day. However, distracted by these thoughts, he lost his way. He did not continue on the same path that had led him up to the magical tree, but instead turned onto a much less used path. Walking astray and on a path completely different from the one that comes up the mountain, the young man was surrounded by clumps of cherry trees, cacti, and eggfruit trees. Panicking, he tried to find his way back to the springs, but the more he walked, the deeper he became entangled in the lush, virgin foliage. The boy and his mule spent the afternoon walking in circles. Dead tired that evening, the young man unloaded his beast and spent the night under the stars. He awoke the next day, aching and itchy from being bitten by ants and mosquitoes. He loaded up his mule, prodded him forward, and set out again, only to walk in circles, dodging the thick overgrowth with great difficulty. After a while, the boy realized that at this rate, he would perish of hunger or fatigue. The oranges didn't matter anymore, only getting out of there to safety. He unloaded the mule so that it might find the way back home by instinct. Unburdened by the oranges, the mule might focus on finding the right way back. Then, as soon as the oranges hit the ground, the overgrowth receded as if by magic. The landscape returned to normal, a hillside full of dark green springs. Elated, the boy ran towards the voices of the laundresses. Once he found them, he did not waste a minute telling them what had happened. As they listened, the women stared off into the distance toward the single, solitary, suspicious inhabitant of the hillside. As the years passed, the vegetation of Chocotete eroded until the hill became the crag it is today. As everything else went, so went the enchanted orange tree. No one has seen it since. The end. Wow, what a way to start a book. Hayana Kapak and Atahualpa and Huascar were all real people. In fact, the town I was raised in for a few years was named Kapak after Hayana Kapak. But we joked that it just stood for cows and pigs and chickens, because it is just a small Michigan town, not fitting for the same name as an Incan ruler. And the story of the boy who just didn't listen and turned the luscious mountain to a rocky crag makes me think that there used to be more vegetation, and then when things dried up, a story was needed. Also, you may have noticed some different sounds in the names. That is because they are not Spanish names, but a pre-Columbian language called Rumashimi, or sometimes called Quechua by outsiders. And that feeds into the podcaster shout-out, Nick Mashinsky's A History of the Incas. It is a great podcast covering the mighty empire that spanned a considerable chunk of the west coast of South America, and also built a lot of cool stuff there. Also, although there is no Incan Empire anymore, it doesn't mean that the descendants of the Incas aren't still living and breathing people. There are a lot of folks in Ecuador who speak a version of the language called Rumashimi. So, if you want to learn more, either in English or in Spanish, I highly recommend checking out A History of the Incas. And if you like it as much as I do, go and give him a listen, a rating, and a review. Or the Spanish language hosts, go and give them a listen and a review too. And the listener shout-out is to Phnom Penh, the capital and largest city in Cambodia. Phnom is a Khmer word meaning mountain and might be part of the root of the ancient kingdom known from Chinese sources as Funan. Pen is likely named after the legendary Lady Pen, a wealthy woman who founded the city in 1372. It was the capital in the mid-1400s and then restored as the capital in 1865 under King Norodom I. The capital was previously in Angkor, where the famous temple is. I've been to Siem Reap to visit the temples, but I would also love to visit Phnom Penh sometime in the future. And so to my listener in Phnom Penh, I say, Saum akun un retri suostri. Thank you and good night.